You're listening to audio from the 2023 Liturgy Collective Conference, a gathering that fosters rest, connection, and growth for church musicians, pastors, and worshipers. For more information, visit liturgycollective.com.
All right. I'm Jonathan Rogers. It's my pleasure to moderate this conversation between Doug McKelvey and Ned Bustard. Doug and Ned are the brains behind the Every Moment Holy books, the Every Moment Holy cinematic universe. many of you probably know about Every Moment Holy and these, what these books are, but Doug, would you, sort of for those who don't know about Every Moment Holy, would you give an idea of what these books are and how they came to be?
Sure. You know, it had its inception in my own need. I was working on a novel and not making a lot of progress on it, and I thought, I really need something to focus me when I sit down in the morning to write, so that I don't end up endlessly checking emails and reading articles and never getting down to the task of writing. So I thought I'm going to write a liturgy for fiction writers. So I took a few hours and I did that. And I sent that to a friend. We were going to be speaking at a conference session together about story. And so I thought, oh, this might be kind of a novel way to end the session. And I sent that to him and he responded and said, you know, yeah, this would work great, but man, I wish I had a liturgy for beekeeping, and he mentioned a couple other things that were interests or hobbies of his. And it was in that moment that I just realized, oh, there actually is something here. This isn't just a novelty or something just for me, but there's probably something in this model of looking at a more everyday sort of moment in life and unpacking that of saying, okay, I claim to believe that the Spirit of God is present and active in every moment, right? And that God intends to use every aspect and every moment of our lives for the shaping of our hearts, to draw us to Him, to conform us more to the image of Christ. And also that, you know, I claim to believe that all of history is moving somewhere toward a new creation. And so to begin to ask the question, well, what does that mean in everyday moments of life, in activities we engage in our celebrations, in our grief, in our just daily chores that we have to engage in the various emotions that we go through in the course of our lives. Can we unpack some of those things? Can we actually begin to make connections between changing a diaper and the coming kingdom of God in all its glory and fullness? So very quickly after my friend had made those comments, just the idea for these books expanded. I mean, within 3 or 4 hours, I had written up the proposal that I sent to the publisher. And that's ultimately what the books became, was these prayers, many of them in liturgical form, where there are parts for various people. But, you know, offered as something that we hoped individuals, families, churches, small groups would be able to find certain prayers that they could incorporate naturally into the rhythm of their lives and the activities they were already engaged in, and that would serve in that sense over time to help recalibrate our hearts toward that eternal perspective and toward recognizing that, no, each moment is significant, and that every part of life, even if I have to go repair my car, which I don't want to do, that is not a moment or an activity that exists outside of the movement of God's Spirit and God, the story that God is telling across history.
Yeah, Doug, you already mentioned the liturgy for changing diapers, or actually two. Just real quickly, would you talk about how you get from changing diapers to the larger, I mean, that's, I think that's a good example of a way of thinking about, I mean, if we understand how that liturgy works, we understand a lot about how Every Moment Holy works. So can you talk about either of the two diaper changing liturgies in Every Moment Holy, Volume 1?
Sure. There are two of them because as I worked on writing more and more of the prayers, I found that that sometimes they would get too long. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that meant I was just repeating myself, but other times it meant that I was trying to pursue two different kind of tracks, two different themes there, and that it would be more helpful to people if it was split into two. So the second one is kind of aimed at an examination of ourselves and how the act of changing a diaper becomes sort of this living parable for our own state, our own need of constant grace, and the work that Christ has done for us, but the work that His Spirit is doing on our behalf on an ongoing basis. But the other prayer, the first one for changing a diaper, is much more about contextualizing that moment as looking at how it's a small act of service, right, to this child, mm-hmm. That over time, you know, these unmarked acts of service and selflessness have a shaping effect on mm-hmm. the heart of a child, preparing them to potentially be more receptive to the grace and love of God at some point in their life.
Thanks. Ned Buster, you created the images for these books. And as we were talking before, to describe them as illustrations isn't exactly accurate. You weren't just setting out to illustrate the liturgies that Doug wrote. Can you talk about that? Why calling these illustrations is not quite right?
Yeah, I was really excited to be part of this project. Doug was saying how he shared it with a friend, and that I met that friend, and he was telling me about this project, and I threw myself at it. I normally don't beg for jobs, but I was like, this project is everything that's near and dear to my heart. I grew up Reformed Episcopalian, went to a non-denominational high school, Christian high school, and then married into the PCA. So I had this whole wide range of things. And then at my current church, I planned the worship, and I saw the need for contemporary prayers. And then the project came together, and my part is the illustrations for them. And the illustrations are, they're all lino cuts, like woodcut designs. It's very historical, rooted in the church. And I'm very interested in Christian symbols, and I bring that into my work normally. So when coming to this project, brought those aspects together. And they aren't necessarily illustrations, they're more meditations. I thought, it really came home to me on the second volume. The second volume is, volume two is Death, Grief, and Hope. And I was talking about both books at an event recently, and the one woman just observed that she didn't have the capability to read the prayers, but she could pray through the artwork. And so that's how these images have become what they are. When we were working on it, Doug would often push back when I'd send initial sketches, and he'd say, that's an illustration of the prayer. Mm-hmm. Let's go for a more poetic interpretation and really allow the reader to explore different ideas and pursue those.
Is icon, I mean, where does the idea of iconography fit in with your approach to these images?
I mean, the Eastern Orthodox Church would talk about icons as windows into heaven. And I think about, I feel reluctant to say that my work is that, but I think that there is that aspect of seeing through the artwork, which I think is true with the written out liturgies as well, that you don't stop with the words, that it's taking you to the throne of God.
Yeah.
As Ned and I have collaborated on coming up with what the different images might be, one of the references that I've wanted to keep in front of Ned is that we want these to unfold as visual sermons for people, or as a visual prayer that a person could enter a prayerful place and meditate on the images, and that there is theology, there is good theology packed into the images that kind of, as you look through the different parts of the art, that meaning begins to unfold. So.
An example of that, we're talking about the prayer for changing diapers. And I just love Easter eggs, you know, when you're going through the movies and they leave those little things for you. So the one about changing diapers, there's... I based it off of a Botticelli painting. Not that it looks like Botticelli at all anymore, but there's little things in there. There's a little stuffed lamb in the background of the image with a wound in its side. Mm. So it looks like a scene of a mom changing her diaper, except there's a little bit more there, and there's a half-eaten apple there for, you know, reason why Christ died. And then instead of nails... there's three safety pins. So it's little things that are pointing you to kind of the bigger story.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I think of liturgy as something that's sort of, that's handed down, that we receive. And then here's a collection of liturgies that, you know, people I know have put together. It's a very different way of thinking about, I mean, it's given me new ways to think about what, you know, liturgies come from somewhere. I would love to hear you talk a little bit about kind of how the process. I mean, you've mentioned that all of these books, there's three now, have come together. There's been a community aspect. I'm especially interested in hearing about volume two, but you may want to talk about the other, you know, all three volumes and the different ways that this is the work of the people, right? I mean, that's, I'm a little vague on the etymology, but somehow liturgy means the work of the people. Somehow, or is that true? Am I right about that?
I've been told that. I think the word, and I'm probably not going to pronounce it right, but liturgia, or something close to that. There's some debate as to whether it's best translated the work of the people or the work for the people,
okay.
Which in the foreword of the new volume, we address that and assert that it may well be both, equally. The work that Christ has done for his people, right? But also the work that he continues to do through his people, that those are equally profound and fitting. Mm-hmm. Images.
Yeah. Volume two is what? Death, grief, and hope. Mm-hmm. And you spend a lot of time with people who are dealing with, you know, the dying process and with grief and entering into hope, to sort of know what language to use here. I'd love to hear you say more about
sure.
that.
Yeah, community was so important in each of the three volumes in the creation of them, but in very different ways with one, two, and three. With volume one, it was that I pitched the book to a small publisher, and they said, yeah, we want to do this. It was Rabbit Room Press. But we don't have the $50,000 or $60,000 it would take to do an initial printing. So they took that to the larger Rabbit Room community, which some of you are no doubt familiar with. But over the space of a year, people just gave money and suggestions for for prayer topics, because it was really a situation where they were saying, we want this to exist in the world. We want it to be a gift from our community to the church and to the culture at large. And so without that kind of involvement, it wouldn't have happened. Volume two was a situation where, because it was prayers related to the grieving, some of them very specific things, like you know, for the loss of a child, or for grieving a death from suicide, or you know, some very difficult subjects, as well as a lot of prayers for people who are facing their own mortality, who are walking through the valley of the shadow, who have, you know, gotten the news that they have 6 to 8 months to live. So while I felt like this was a book that I needed to work on, there was a lot of fear and trembling that I felt like, you know, well, who am I to try to articulate what might be on the heart of parents who have just lost a child when that's not something I've walked through. So I knew that it could only happen if there were people walking with me through the process of writing these who had gone through these things or who were currently going through them. And there ended up being around 150 people that I corresponded with who were, you know, walking through one or the other of those kind of scenarios. And then there were a number of people who became very involved with me. There was a woman who had just lost her husband and her 7 and 9 year old daughters 2 weeks before we were introduced. And for the next year, she gave me, sometimes multiple times a week, but pretty much every week, a window into what she was going through that week. And she would look at the prayers I was writing and would give me feedback. And there were other people who did that as well, who would just be very honest and say, yeah, these parts are true to what I was experiencing or what I'm going through right now. But you know, these other things you're saying seem irrelevant, and this thing seems actually like it could be hurtful to some people. And so it was just, and these people recognized that they were offering a gift to those who would walk these same difficult roads after them. You know, that's
so
being,
fascinating. I'm sorry to interrupt, but so fascinating that the people for whom these liturgies were written were giving you the words that you're giving back to them.
Yeah.
That are then being given out to other people who are going through similar things.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like how the body of Christ is supposed to work.
Yeah.
And then volume three is lots of different people wrote the...
Yeah, so for volume three, which we subtitled The Work of the People, there are 60 authors who contributed to it, as well as 7 illustrators. So Ned art directed other artists who contributed to that as well. So it became a very different sort of you know, community work in that regard, that there were many voices who are represented in this one.
Yeah. Ned, as you were working on volume two, your wife Leslie was struggling with, was dealing with cancer, and then she, I may be a little vague on the timeline, I think she died after you were finished with book two. And so, and then book two was...
That's one of the things that the whole experience of being part of Every Moment Holy and making this has been really life-changing, to be able to serve people in this way. As Doug was saying, he didn't know how to write prayers for folks who were dying and dealing with grief, and folks came along beside. I, while we were working on it, I was struggling with the same kind of thing. Like, I need to draw and, or create these prints and printmaking on themes that I can't relate to. I always say all my stuff is happy, clappy kind of artwork. And in the middle of working on that, my wife got diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer and stage 4 melanoma. And all of a sudden, the Lord gave me that opportunity to be able to relate to the material a lot better. Yeah. And and I would be laying, I designed the books as well, so I'd be laying out the prayers and reading through a prayer for loss of a spouse while my wife is downstairs dying of cancer. And that was not easy. But then there was a mercy in it as well, that after the book came out, my wife went into hospice, and we were then able to use these prayers to pray her into glory through that. And it was just one of these amazing things that we do our work of literature writing and art making and well, I mean, creating worship services is for our brothers and sisters, and it ends up being a gift to us.
Doug, we're running out of time, but I would like to hear you talk just a minute about the idea of formation and liturgy, and you know, you've talked about the idea of thinking Christianly. The floor is now open for you to talk about those things.
Well, I think it was Francis Schaeffer who maybe coined the phrase thinking Christianly. And that is a hope that we have for one of the ways that these books might serve the church, is to, well, on the one hand, to articulate what might be on someone's heart in the midst of a moment when the words are hard to find. But also in this discipleship spiritual formation sense, that the theology that is a part of the prayers that underpins them, that over time, as people incorporate various prayers into the rhythms of their lives, that there is that shaping effect, yeah. Right? Because if we've been able to form these prayers with, you know, wrestling with questions of theology, and if they do contain distilled sort of statements of some things that are true according to Scripture, then our hope is that over time those words, those phrases, as people make them their own, and consider those things, that it would have that kind of discipleship, mentoring, yeah. Dynamic that would mm-hmm. be in play as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that's been exciting for me is to see how these books have been used kind of backwards in people's lives. There's a prayer for setting up the Christmas tree. And I folks have emailed me like, oh, we almost had set up the Christmas tree, and we stop. There's a prayer for this. And then they ran and they got the prayer book. And what I love about that is it basically it helps the folks who are using it to remember that every part of life is holy. And yeah. And my daughters often text me, Dad, is there a prayer for this? And you know, I'm like, yeah, page 34, you know, go there. But just the fact that that's in their heads, that it's like, oh, there's a prayer for this, rather than
then, you know, well, prayers are only on Sundays. So it's been neat to see how that has just, that has been formative in people's lives, that they're like, wait, I think they're, and then also, I mean, Doug will get emails of people complaining that there's not a prayer for fill in the blank.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, these books have been such a gift to me and to my people. So I'm so grateful. I often say that I kind of feel like there was my life before Every Moment of Holy came along and my life since. And, and book three is coming out, what, in early November, is that right?
November 3rd.
November 3rd, okay. Great, Tim, we need to wrap up, so thanks everybody, and thank you, and thank you for these books.